Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Jay Hughes, a.k.a. Dr. J, and I'll be your guide to a sexy, high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Ralph Nader spoke May 16, 2000, at the Hartford Public Library in Hartford, Connecticut. He was introduced by Elizabeth Horton Scheff, a recently elected Green member of the Hartford City Council.
What can I say about Ralph Nader? Well, I think Ralph Nader has been a champion for the common person for as long as I can remember. He started out so many years ago when I was just a tiny tot. He committed his life way back then to end the injustice of corporate welfare in America, to alert the public on issues of consumer problems with products. He's been a tireless advocate for justice in our community. The Green Party has joined hand-in-hand with Mr. Nader's candidacy to ensure that big money gets out of politics. Yeah. I'm always asked, why are you a Green Party candidate? What's so good about the Green Party? And I always tell people that it is the Green Party that is actually bringing democracy back to America. So Mr. Nader is a supporter of universal health care, of dismantling the World Trade Organization, talks about healthy environments, not only in environmental justice, but healthy environments in our city where all people are accepted and valued for who they are and what they can contribute to America's future. So Mr. Nader is our candidate, and we are proud to be in support of a man who has demonstrated. So I think, I tell people all the time, when a candidate, and I'm a politician, so, this is coming from the heart. When a candidate comes to you and says, this is what I'm going to do for you, you should always see what the candidate has done for others. And that will tell you exactly what this candidate is all about. So in that respect, I mean, Mr. Nader's track record as someone whom we should support wholeheartedly, it's very, very clear. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the next president of the United States of America.
Sure you weren't sent here by John Rowland. Thank you very much, Elizabeth, for those kind words. I want to thank the signer as well.
Yeah.
She's lucky I talk slowly. Well, this campaign, as you know, is designed to go through the country with citizen groups on the ground. That's the only way political campaigns should be, because that's the only way they'll never forget where they came from. And we come out of the citizen movement, all kinds of citizen groups we started and worked with. We've had some good victories, but in recent years we can see that democracy doors are closing as a result of the power of corporations dominating our government, turning it against its own people at the worst, or turning it into indifference at the best. And this process goes on day by day in Washington. More political action committee money from business interests. They're now up to 80% of federal election money comes from business interests. It goes on with 22,000 lobbyists representing corporate interests in Washington. They don't spend their day looking at the Washington Monument. It goes on with putting their own executives in high government positions for a few years, and then they come back and get a promotion and a bonus. I'll give you an example of that. Robert Rubin came from a Wall Street investment firm, and he joined the Clinton administration. And in a short time after being in the White House, he became Secretary of the Treasury, a very powerful post. There, he pushed a bill called the Bank Modernization Bill, which we call the Bank Concentration of Power Bill. That bill allowed all kinds of giant mergers, like the Travelers Insurance Company merging with Citigroup. And it allowed enormous power in these financial conglomerates, whose assets now are moving toward the $1 trillion level. Imagine that. To show you their size, all the assets of all the credit unions in America amount to one half of the assets of Citigroup in New York City. Do you know how many people belong to the credit unions? Over 50 million. Still, look what it amounts to. Anyway, he pushes this bill, then he resigns last year around this time to go back to New York. He resigned to go back to New York, and he does what he shouldn't have done. He lobbies as a private citizen to get this bill through. You're not supposed to do that for a year. There's a complaint pending on that point. And then the next thing we know, after the bill is passed and signed, and the biggest lobbyist for that bill was Citigroup Corporation, formerly Citicorp and Citibank, he joined Citibank. He joined Citigroup as one of the three chair. And the New York Times reported a few weeks ago that for 2 months' work, last fall, he got $21 million. That's the way the game works. And then the other ways these companies have power over government is they can threaten to close down plants and go to Indonesia or China or Mexico. That brings workers to their knees, brings representatives and senators to their knees. And of course, another way they have power over government is they're using our money to have power over government to turn the government against ourselves. For example, the money in the banks, that's not their money. That's our money. We're paying them to make a profit. They then impose all kinds of charges for everything but breathing when you go into a bank. They charge you for contacting a human teller more than a couple of times. And First Union will charge you for 50 cents per deposit slip. 50 cents per deposit slip. Now, all this is approved by the government. They're using our money, profits from our money, to lobby the Congress to allow them to further extort money from the people who entrust them with the money from which the banks make the profit. Wonderful, isn't it? The electric and telephone gas companies, they use your money, the ratepayers, in order to put ads propagandizing for electricity deregulation, which of course is a great bonanza for these companies because we have to pay for the nuclear power plants twice, not just once, so-called stranded costs. And the same thing with the Patriots NFL football team, we all remember that. The Green Party was the first against that, formed a coalition in Connecticut, all kinds of people, from stockbrokers to blue-collar workers to conservative anti-tax types. And after 4 months, the thing fell apart, and Robert Kraft comes to Hartford, announces it before red-faced John Rowland, who gave away the store, and says he's going to go back and build the stadium with private money, the way he should have. Now, it's interesting. Where was the money coming from that the politicians cobbled together to build the supposed stadium on the banks of the Hartford of the Connecticut River, which was going to attract all kinds of new enterprise. Presumably, you know, entrepreneurs all over the country would watch the Patriots on Monday Night Football and say, wow, Hartford, that's my city. I'm going to ship a factory there. You know, cities get revitalized from within, not from some flashy football team on TV that's open for business 8 days a year and is supposed to create jobs 8 days a year. Well, that was $500 million of the Connecticut taxpayers' money. In other words, these corporations use other people's money in order to concentrate power in themselves and in the government, to make government serve their interests in order to leave this people defenseless. And there are just hundreds of examples like that. A few months ago, a woman brought us with ovarian cancer, and she said it was very late stages. She went to her physician. Her physician said that he could only prescribe a drug called Taxol. Unbeknownst to her, that drug was discovered and tested in human clinical trials by the U.S. government, the National Institutes of Health, government scientists. It cost $31 million. Under government policy, namely corporate power over government policy, that taxpayer asset, that anti-cancer drug, had to be given away free under a monopoly marketing agreement to a drug company. And they picked Bristol-Myers Squibb. Bristol-Myers Squibb proceeds to charge this woman and others like her $14,000 for a series of shots. Now, they didn't spend a dollar developing that drug. Furthermore, they didn't pay the taxpayer any royalties on their profits. Do you know what the revenues this year is going to be from that one drug? $1.1 billion in revenues. And this happens all the time. The drug companies try to advertise how great and innovative they are. Obviously, they don't know about an MIT study that said that 11 out of 14 of the most significant drugs between 1970 and 1995 were developed with tax money. And of course, they can charge whatever they want. Look at the prices for drugs now. They're the highest in the world because we're the only country in the world that doesn't control drug prices. So the same drug company sells the same drug in Mexico or Canada, and they're much lower prices than they are in the United States. And so it goes on. And we're told, oh, what a great economy this is. What a great economy. 10 years of sustained growth, corporate profits, stock market prices. Wow. Well, let's look at the other side of the story. Department of Labor figures show a majority of workers in this country are making less in inflation-adjusted dollars than they were making 20, 25 years ago. Working 160 hours on the average longer, commuting back and forth longer, less time with the family, less time with children, less time with community. What do you think that costs? Well, people can't even have the time to go to a town meeting, because by the time they come home, it's like 7 o'clock or 6:30. I got to prepare supper. I got to deal with the kids. They've got other things to do. They're exhausted. People don't show up for their elementary citizen responsibilities. That's not all by way of excusing people. A lot of people can find the time to show up. But certainly the numbers are dwindling. When you used to work in your own hometown, you're home a few minutes after the whistles ring, and now if you have to commute, crowded, bumper-to-bumper traffic, because the auto companies and the oil and tire companies years ago bought up the electrified trolley systems in 28 major cities, ripped up the tracks, and pushed for the highways so they can sell more cars, tires, and oil. In fact, General Motors was caught by the Justice Department, charged with criminal violation of antitrust laws for doing that, such as in Los Angeles, the biggest electrified trolley system in the world, and was convicted in federal district court right after World War II. and for what some economists call the crime of the century, given the pollution, the accidents, the time wasted every day, instead of having a balanced modern public transit system, along with the highway system, GM was fined $5,000. Every weekday, people in this country are paying the price for that GM illegal conspiracy and restraint of trade, as it was called in the indictment. Every day they're going bumper to bumper. But the auto companies still control the propaganda war, don't they? Have you ever seen a new car advertised on TV with no advertised on TV with traffic congestion? Have you ever seen an ad on TV showing people relaxing, reading the paper, snoozing in a modern public transit system, looking out at a parallel highway clogged bumper to bumper trucks, vans, and cars? How long are we going to take this sort of thing? 20% of the children growing up in poverty? About 16% or so of African-American kids here in Hartford, lead poisoning. Figures vary. Hispanics around 12%. Where did they get the poison? Lead-based paint peeling off crumbling tenement walls. Heavy end for it at 2 or 3 years age. Where's the landlord? There's Hartford Hospital on some apartment buildings right nearby a few years ago with lead-based paint. The kids would get sick. The ambulance would come and take them to St. Francis before they straightened that out. The hospital was embarrassed finally by press reports. 41% of minority kids here in Hartford have asthma. It's an epidemic. Quite likely related to environmental causes like air pollution. 41%? Imagine 41% of the kids have trouble breathing every minute. That's America, land of the home, land of the brave, home, you know, land of the free, home of the brave, as they say. How long are we going to take this? We're running with a 110-year-old internal combustion engine. It's choking our lungs, wasting our pocketbooks, threatening the planet's environment. What do we do? Say, don't bother me, I gotta watch the latest rerun of Cheers. What do we do? We sit around, half of us don't even bother to vote because we don't think our vote matters. That's pretty close to the truth, given Tweedledum Democrat, Tweedledee Republican. Look at Joe Lieberman. He's running for re-election. He's got millions in the bank. And he's got the Republican Governor Rowland telling any Republicans, don't you dare run against Joe Lieberman. He's the best Republican we could ever have. You've got a Democratic Party here who threw the gubernatorial election to Rowland in return for the Republican Party throwing the senatorial re-election to Chris Dodd. Chris Dodd, the paradigm of cash register politics. You know, put the money in, out pops Chris Dodd. twist arms to get the Galleria Boondoggles under Haven. Get the Galleria Boondoggle New Haven. What are these Gallerias? It's Adrian's Landing, Elizabeth was working on today. What's going on here? When small business and homeowners and tenants have to pay. So the big department chains like Nordstrom, Gap, and others can sail into this town on an ocean of tax dollars and then not have to pay any property tax or be able to keep the sales tax after they make their profits. There's a lot of ways to criticize this operation. And one way is it's diverting money from real needs in a neighborhood, like the health of children. Here is much more important than the excessive profits of these giant retailers who are unwelcome. When are you going to hear Albert Gore and George W. Bush come out against corporate welfare? You think you'll hear them say, get these corporations off welfare? 5 years and out? No more aid to dependent corporations? It's all this corporate subsidies and welfare. It's reducing their incentive to work, these corporations. What's amazing, not only do middle class tax dollars go to these corporations by these grease-packed politicians, but then these corporations pay their executives humongous bonuses and compensation. The top 300 corporations in America had CEOs in 1940 who paid themselves 12 times the entry-level worker wage in their company. That went to 40 times in 1980, and today it is 416 times. You see the greed? You know, I never thought the CEOs in 1940 were particularly Elon Meissner-y in their instincts, you know. I mean, we thought, you know, they really wanted a lot of bucks for themselves. They were pikers. Can you imagine telling them what their successors ripped off the taxpayers and the workers? Imagine that. 416 times. That is the highest in the industrial world by far. In Japan, they're creeping up to 20, 25 times. They were about 10 times, but they're learning from the U.S. experience. Hey, they get away with it in America. Why not in Japan? The same thing is beginning to happen in Europe, but they'll never catch up to the CEOs. Here, there's no way. Now look at your own roles here. We're all voters, consumers, taxpayers, workers, members of communities. What kind of power do we have? You know, you can take 1,000 Americans with different labels on them, conservative, liberal, progressive, moderate, whatever. You ask them one question. Do you think you have adequate power as workers, consumers, taxpayers, citizens, and voters against the concentration of power arrayed against you? Every one of them will say, we don't have enough power. And when you make that clear with example after example from the everyday experience of people, then you've got a movement going. You haven't got a slogan going. You haven't got a label going. You've got a movement going. People understand from their own experience that power leads to more than respect when it comes to citizens. It leads to justice. It leads to health. It leads to safety. Leads to environmental sustainability. It leads to responsive government. It leads to fulfilling life's human possibilities. It leads to respect for future generations. Let's take the situation in Hartford. Where do you think it's more likely for police to misbehave? In poor, crumbled neighborhoods who have no power, or in West Hartford? How about Ava? Well, you know, there may be different law enforcement situations in those states, in those cities rather. But when people have power and they can make the call and get it returned if there's police misbehavior, police are not likely to misbehave. And when they can't make the call, when they can be pushed around, they are likely to experience misbehavior. Worse is that it's not likely to be community policing. Community policing, where police live, work in their neighborhoods, much less likely to have examples and displays of police brutality. It's quite clear. Everybody knows each other. Well, that began to fade out 40 years ago. Do you know with what? It's called the motor vehicle. Because they could come in with the sirens and come out with the sirens, right? And of course, you come in, and you don't know the neighborhood, and it's been a terrible situation, or a drug war, you're going to get scared, and you're going to do something bad. Or, if you're not scared, but you just like to push people around, because you can get away with it, because you're not going to be held to account, then you're going to do it. And inadequate training of police, as the police academies point out, leads to a lot of this kind of trouble. A disciplined, accountable police force is a police force that's going to know how to contain the use of force and not use it illegally. There's nothing worse than illegal use of force by law enforcement officers, at least in Florida. Not only harms innocent people and destroys their lives, but it generates a much broader disrespect for the law. And a lot of bad things happen from that. And what needs to be done in every area of injustice is to highlight the justice in the area, the success in the area, as a frame of reference to understand and move against the injustice or the failure. If there are inner city schools that are working very well, we have to ask why. If there are agricultural areas that are dealing with non-chemical agriculture and producing good food and making a living, we have to ask why. If there are youngsters who don't take drugs, as most youngsters don't take drugs, we have to ask why, in order to understand the youngsters do take drugs. I've always believed people are not born evil, they don't grow evil. Brutish conditions lead to brutish behavior. Brutish conditions lead to brutish behavior. Desperate behavior. It's really hard for people who belong to the contented classes, as James Kenneth Galbraith called them in the book, the upper 10, 20% income level, to understand what life is like for a majority of the American people. They haven't benefited from the economic gains. They are losing their precious time every single day from anything that's really important in terms of family and community. Two incomes per family and they're still broke. Two incomes per family and they still have to go deep into debt. Two incomes per family and they get ripped off with incredibly high interest rate gouging. People are living from payday to payday, if they're lucky. And if they're unlucky, they're living from payday loan to payday loan at 100, 200, 300, 400% interest. Which, by the way, used to be illegal in Connecticut in the 70s, before the banks repealed the usury laws. Now, just look, for example, at how we can become more powerful in the various roles I just described. First of all, we have to believe that citizens can make a difference once they're organized. How do we do that? By studying American history. What do you think it was like being an abolitionist of slavery in 1840 in Mississippi or Virginia? You think that was easy? This was the dominant business community held human beings as slaves in the cotton and other plantations. And that dominant business community controlled the police power, they controlled the politicians, and they controlled the newspapers. How would you like to be an abolitionist? You think you got big odds today? Try that one. The second is, how would you feel knocking on doors in Kansas in 1870-80 as pushing for women's right to vote? You knock on doors and the practice that made so many men laugh in those days was they'd hear the women's suffrage coming down the street, knock on the door, guys would go up on the second floor, open the window, and throw dirty hot water on their heads. So you think they gave up? You think they said, oh my, my frock has been damaged. They kept going. Why? Because they wanted it badly. They wanted justice badly. How badly do we want? And then how would you like to be?
You're listening to a speech delivered by Ralph Nader on May 16th, 2000 at the Hartford Public Library in Hartford, Connecticut, brought to you by Change Surfer Radio and the Connecticut Greens.
How would you like to be like an auto worker or a coal mine worker? Not even able to eke out a living from the back-breaking work. I don't know how many of you have ever gone down into a coal mine. That should be considered cruel and unusual punishment no matter what they're paid. And it's in the auto lines, the assembly lines. They wouldn't let you go to the bathroom, hardly. You had no rights, no benefits, no pensions, no workers' compensation, no unemployment compensation, no rights to, no trade union, and they all fought for trade union. They put their entire livelihoods and that of their family on the line. And they had no safeguards, no safety net. And they had detectives hired by the corporations beating up on them. They persevered. And they prevailed against the dominant business community. And I might say the dominant industrials were against women's right to vote because women were speaking out against child labor. They thought kids should be in school, not in brutalized dungeons, working to produce products for pennies a day. And the farmers in 1887 in East Texas, put yourself in those positions. Here you are, you're working 16 hours back-breaking work a day under the hot Texas sun. Weather can wipe you out. You're borrowing from the banks at high interest rates. They're gouging you. You're shipping your produce to market on the railroads. They're gouging you with the freight rates. You have no farm organization. It's one farmer against the banks and railroads. Another farmer down the lane against the banks and railroads. In 6 months, the farmers organized in East Texas counties. 200,000 farmers, $1 dues a year. That's like $45 now. And they started the populist progressive movement that went 25 years and transformed politics in America. They elected senators, representatives, governors. You think they quit when they slipped into the mud in front of Farmer Jones's farm and muddied up their overalls? You think they quit when it was late at night and some wild dogs started attacking them? They persevered. They wanted it badly, and they beat the dominant business community. And in our century, you can see again and again, people wanted it badly. Rosa Parks got on that bus. She was no innocent person. You know, she was a seasoned worker with the NAACP. But, you know, this time she wasn't going to go with the back of the bus. And then the bus boycott occurred in Alabama. And one thing led to another. And the civil rights laws were enacted. You know, the dominant business community didn't really like the civil rights laws. First of all, they didn't like to have to pay minority workers more money. They didn't like to have to hire minority workers. They could easily exclude them and discriminate them. Restaurant owners didn't want to serve black customers. So they fought the civil rights laws through their politicians in Congress, not to mention the state legislators. Do you think the civil rights workers wanted it badly? You're right. They persevered. See, when you look at our history, you will see every social justice movement except one that I can locate, the GI Bill of Rights, that gave free college education to World War II veterans. Every social justice movement had three characteristics. It started out with one or two people. Number two, it had a real drive against the dominant business community. And number three, and most interesting, it usually had a third party associated with it, like the Women's Right to Vote Party or the Abolitionist Party. Now we come to the present time, and we ask ourselves, do we really want to sit around and watch this country decay more and more into a pit of greed and speculation where our government becomes alienated from its own people because it's been bought and purchased for by these giant corporations? Don't we think we have a lot of solutions on the shelf that can be applied to the problems and injustices here in this country, and we project abroad a more humane foreign policy? Don't you think that we can, in many ways, in this country, fast, turn this country in the right direction toward major changes? Clearly, we can have renewable energy, we can have solar energy, we can have efficient energy, we can have deconcentrated energy, so we don't have to rely on thousands of miles of oil pipeline links or nuclear power plants with radioactive waste. You know, if one of those millstone plants has a class 9 accident, Do you know what the Atomic Energy Commission estimated in terms of land area that would be contaminated with a Class 9 accident from one nuclear plant? Here are their words. An area the size of Pennsylvania. That's the kind of time bomb that we hope will never go off. And there are more than one millstone plant. Do you know, for example, how fast we could improve the livable wage for workers? Let me tell you why. The minimum wage now in real dollars is lower than it was in 1970. If it was the same as 1970, it would be $7.60, for example. It's now $5.15. And guess what? There is a difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. You know what it is? It's 33 cents. And because the Republicans are supporting a minimum wage increase of $1 over 3 years, and the Democrats of $1 over 2 years. And that's 33 cents difference. And the Republicans passed a bill a few weeks ago for that minimum wage, and they put an amendment on it. For every dollar that a worker got in a higher minimum wage, they gave $11 in tax breaks to businesses. Now, that's not going to be law, but I mean, just show me the brazen audacity of these corporatists that they think they can get away with something like that and not lose the election the next time around.
The library will be closing in 20 minutes. If you wish to check out, you can take it.
Okay. Speaking of the library, let me recommend some books. And these books will show how fast we can improve this country. One is called Democracy at Risk by Jeff Gates. Just stop. Democracy at Risk in paperback as well as hardback. And he shows how policies can begin giving workers capital share so that they don't just have to live on a wage. They can start owning some of the capital and the shares in this country. Even to the point of view, for example, of going into retail stores and setting up the retail stores where each time they purchase, they get an increment of share in the store. But there are a lot of other ways they can do it, as workers, pension holders, etc. The other book is called Natural Capitalism, and that deals with natural resources, by Paul Hawken, a successful businessman, and the team of Amory and Hunter Lovins, who are very famous in terms of their environmental insights and advocacy. And this book shows how we can get 10 times the work out of existing natural resources and make our economy more efficient, more productive, less polluting, and more competitive. For example, how to get 10 times more work out of 1,000 BTUs of energy. Our energy engineering systems that process energy, motor vehicles, electric plants, enormously wasteful. And they show how some companies are beginning to move in that direction. Also, it's time to allow farmers to grow industrial hemp, which is the greatest fiber I can see this is a hot issue here. For those of you who don't know much about industrial hemp, it's a 5,000-year-old plant. It was cultivated in ancient China. It has now 50,000 known uses. Fuel, food, textiles, lubricants, medicines, cosmetics, paper. Henry Ford actually built a car out of industrial hemp. It is extremely strong and is environmentally benign, and it doesn't require pesticides and nitrogen fertilizer. It can be grown anywhere in the country. We haven't been able to grow it since 1937 because somehow some superstitious officials and the paper industry, for different reasons, thought it shouldn't be allowed to be grown here. Even though it was grown from day one up until 1937 in the United States. George Washington grew it, Thomas Jefferson grew it, the first American flags were made of it, the early editions of the Declaration of Independence was made from industrial hemp paper. And if you've ever seen a really old book that hasn't become tattered and old, yellow, chances are it was made out of industrial hemp, far better than the paper. Now things have changed. I'm pleased to report that an ex-CIA director is now for industrial hemp to reduce our reliance on imported oil. That international paper has turned around. They're now for it, running out of trees, I guess. Canada now has legalized it and shipping it to the United States. And the DEA is still sitting on a petition to get it off the prescribed list because of this superstition. You cannot get high on industrial hemp. It's 1/3 of 1% THC. You cannot do it. If anybody knows anyone who's gotten high on industrial hemp, you will get the National Academy of Sciences Award for improbable discoveries. Let's talk a bit about... You imagine on the debate saying that George W. and Albert Gore, what's your position on legalizing industrial hemp? They were last seen fleeing out the back door. But I'd say, George, come back here. Your father bailed out of a plane in the South Pacific in a parachute made from industrial hemp. Now, let's see, what kind of impact do we have on military and foreign policy? Corporations are driving our military policy because they want more weapon systems to be bought, funded by congressional appropriations and fed to the Pentagon. I've talked to a number of analysts in the Pentagon, and I'm amazed at how many analysts think the F-22, the Osprey aircraft, the B-2 bomber, the Joint Strike Fighter, all of which are going to cost over $230 billion, have no strategic necessity to them, that they're not needed. Why don't they speak up? Because the Pentagon's purse strings are controlled by the Congress. And guess who controls the Congress? Lockheed Martin Marietta, General Dynamics, United Technologies, and so on. And that's the way it works. I don't know if you can see this, but I want to show it to you anyway. The big red graph is the Pentagon budget. And by the way, this is a budget that's reaching $300 billion, even though the principal adversary to which it has been dedicated no longer exists. The Soviet Union is gone. In fact, we're collaborating with the successor to the KGB. We are giving aid to the Russians. The Russians are having trouble feeding their own people. They want to cut military nuclear weapons faster than we do. Now, the other columns are children's health, how much is spent, housing, education, environmental protection agency, and Head Start. Now, you see that? Now, if you want to look at the military budget of the U.S. and its allies compared to China, Russia, and the so-called rogue states, watch this. And they still want more. Jesse Helms wants more. And the others are pushing. And guess what? Guess who's on their side almost?
Chris Dodd.
How about Bill Clinton and Al Gore? All right, is Bill Clinton and Al Gore, are Bill Clinton and Al Gore for militarization of outer space? Yeah. Are they for a missile defense system, which physicists just put out a report saying isn't going to work, even if it's allegedly needed? No, they're for that. And they have a push for a bigger military budget. Indeed, they're not asking to recall our troops from Western Europe and East Asia, who are apparently spending $70 billion in backup money and front money of our money to defend prosperous countries who can defend themselves against non-existent enemies. Unless they think Mongolia or Ukraine are real threats. See? Do we have any influence on that? I mean, it's almost as if there's an authoritarian barrier between us. And look at the policy toward Iraq. This is an interesting policy, isn't it? The USA. Here's what you do. You kill tens of thousands of Iraqi children in order to spite the dictator. Oh, he's really losing sleep over that. He is increasing his repression successfully because he is saying that Western countries led by the U.S. are starving and keeping medicines and bombing electric plants that are leading to diseased water that are killing tens of thousands of innocent Iraqis. And he's entrenched even more. If he was in charge of American foreign policy to Iraq, he would do exactly the same thing. There'd be no difference. Yeah. You know that one six-year-old boy got 20,000 times more media exposure than all those children in Iraq, all those entities. Children in Iraq, they got one program on 60 Minutes, Leslie Stahl, 1996. She went to the hospital with them. Elian. Elian, that's what the media does. If it isn't Elian for 6 months, it's O.J. Simpson trial for a year. If it isn't O.J. Simpson trial for a year, it's Lewinsky. For 14 months.
Right.
If it isn't Lewinsky for 14 months, it's the Menendez brothers. It's Tanya Hardy. It is the Roman circus. Crowding up. Think of the struggles that you've had here in Connecticut. You can never get on TV because it's Elian. It's O.J. Simpson. I mean, the local TV news, too. With their 9 minutes of ads, 3 minutes of street crime right at the beginning, very superficially covered, 1 minute of artificial chit-chat between the anchors, the first previews of the weather. Boy, they really go big on the weather. They're coming across the Cascades, Montana, you know, all the little temperature differences between towns in Connecticut, 5 miles apart, the latest Doppler radar. And then 4 minutes of sports, and maybe a little movie review, and the prescribed animal story, and that's it. That's what happened in Hartford. Kidding? They're using our property. We own the public airwaves, the TV stations control, pay us nothing. They pay us nothing for this. You know that. No fee to the Federal Communications Commission. And those are $4 or $5 billion of corporate welfare. Congress just gave them $70 billion of new spectrum space. And these TV and radio stations are up in Congress trying to block the FCC from giving neighborhood radio licenses to civic groups, religious groups, and others so they can communicate with one another without advertising pressures, etc., in a 2-3 mile radius where they live. We ought to ask ourselves and ask the candidates. We own the public lands, the mineral, oil, gas, timber companies control what we own, make a profit, and give us no royalties, and leave environmental wreckage behind. We own the public airways, I said. We own $7 or so trillion of worker pension funds. How come workers don't control that? They did. They control big corporations. Because the pension funds control about a third of the stock on the New York Stock Exchange. But guess who controls the stock? The employers like General Electric, IBM, the big banks and insurance companies. Imagine what we could do if we had an intermediate mechanism where the workers could direct the investment of all that money for the benefit of the workers and their families and their country instead of speculative uses that are employed today. Well, let me just end on this note because I hear the bell is about to ring. We're going into 50 states. This is the 30th. This is the 36th state since March 1st. We're connecting with citizen groups all over the country, fighting a whole variety of fights that you read about here in Connecticut, same types of struggles, whether it's for workers or homeless people or public transit or environment, or trying in West Virginia to stop the coal companies from blowing the tops off the mountains and burying the streams and destabilizing the communities. Imagine, they're doing this regularly, dynamiting entire tops of mountains. They've been traditional in the lore of these people's past. And hundreds of miles of streams buried. And they don't pay any money for this. They don't pay for their destruction. And they don't pay any property taxes for the schools. To say it's feudalistic is to underestimate the corporate callousness that's going on here. And indeed, if the government would use the money that it already has from 30 cent tax per ton of coal, they could push reclamation and create a lot more jobs. But the government is a minion of King Coal. So we're doing connecting that way. Our website is votenator.com or votenator.org. We'll keep up to date. You can send us suggestions. You can fill out volunteer forms, which are there in terms of what skills. If you have computer skills or organizing skills or whatever, because we want these skills to be deployed back here at home, getting ready for a big get-out-the-vote push in November. You can also enlarge your own circle of awareness of the Green Party candidates, local and state. Elizabeth Sheff was the first elected to the Hartford City Council. And there'll be more coming. Mike DeRosa is running for the state Senate. Tom Savigny is running for the state assembly. And there are many others. And everyone has a circle of relatives, friends, co-workers, acquaintances, neighbors. Just talk it up. Talk, it's America. Talk it up. Talk it up. And, you know, there's a lot of small talk between people because they don't want to talk about serious issues because they might embarrass each other or criticize each other. So they say, hi. You say, hi. They say, God, it looks like it's cloudy today. Yeah, I think it is. I saw the news with Mike Rain. Boy, that traffic was terrible. Did you see that story on Oprah? Yeah. Talk about serious. That's what built this country, huh? That's what built this. Every time there's a move forward, you know, during the fight against the Vietnam War, civil rights, the students start talking about these things. And just if you're ever inhibited, just get rid of it and talk about it. Because if you're inhibited, you can't really be an effective citizen. Now, my parents took me to the town meetings in Winston regularly. And I saw all kinds of things. I saw citizens continually challenging the mayor and the selectman. And they were the same ones, like five or six. And one of them was called Mr. Franz. He was there, he had his files and everything. You know, tight. And others in the audience would sort of say, go, you know. And on the other hand, say, gee, look, he's a little tough on these politicians. He won't sit down. So the next day, Mr. Franz would be walking down the little main street, and people would point it out. You know, like, hey, there goes Mr. Franz. Like, you got the town drunk, the town fool, the town citizen. And I would mention it to my mother and father, and they'd say, look, it isn't Mr. Franz who's the deviant. It's the people who don't do anything and just complain and don't do anything. You know, people say, how did I end up this way? I mean, what did I do? Why did I do all this, right? And I say, I had a lucky choice of parents. And one day I came home from school, and my father said, this was 10 years old, he said, what'd you do in school today, Ralph? Did you learn how to think, or did you learn how to believe? I went to my room and thought about that one. Another day I came home, it was a nice day, and my mother said to me at dinner, she said, do you love your country, Ralph? I said, sure do. She said, well, you make sure when you grow up, you work to make your country more lovable. And guess what? She's right here today. Thank you. And also, the Greens are looking for someone to run against Senator Joe Lieberman. Okay? If you do, you're going to get at least 20-25% of the vote, even if you don't spend any money. So think about that. The worst situation is an uncontested incumbent situation. It really goes to their head. Someone said if they have one. So let me just conclude. Let's all work together on this. We're going to surprise a lot of people. Before any national coverage, the polls came in. We're ahead of Buchanan. We're between 4-6% nationwide. Ahead of Buchanan has been, campaigning for years. And I'm at 9% in California, 70% in Oregon. And someone in California told me, you're 9% in California? That's the best in the nation. I said, when do you see the polls from Massachusetts and Connecticut? Yeah. So let's go out and work. Spread the word, mobilize the neighborhoods, and distribute some of the materials that are on the table and where you came in. You cannot believe how efficient and accelerated word of mouth is. Word of mouth from one credible neighbor to another, one credible friend to another, can pass through a society like lightning. So spread it. Don't wait around for the TV. Don't wait around for the radio. If they do it, fine. It's like gravy. But no democracy worthy of its name should ever have to rely on a commercial media. It should have its own media. Remember, it's VoteNader.com or VoteNader.org. If I get that question once more time, don't you think you're taking votes away from Albert Gore? Well, I got 10 reasons, 10 answers to that, but I think I got a shorthand. Next time a reporter says, don't you think you're taking votes away from Albert Gore? My answer is going to be VoteNader.com.
You've been listening to a speech by Ralph Nader, delivered May 16th, 2000, at the Hartford Public Library in Hartford, Connecticut. This has been brought to you in conjunction with Change Surfer Radio and the Connecticut Greens. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes@changesurfer.com. That's jhughes@changesurfer.com. Also, check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com. Previous Change Surfer radio programs can be listened to from www.changesurfer.com and streaming MP3. Thanks to the Radio for All project.